It's like you bending over and had your blood rush to your head nonstop. That's probably why I'm so simple. Well, that's what it is. I mean, it's a good job, and I enjoy the people that I work for, and I like working on horses. I've been doing it all my life.
How important are the horseshoes for a thoroughbred that races?
Well, you know, you want to keep the horse's feet level, and you want to keep them the toe short on them so they don't have to break over. It's easier for them to break over when their feet are a little bit shorter. So it's important, they're very important, and that you have them balanced and you don't have no long feet. That's the main thing.
Describe to me the horseshoe that you put on these racehorses.
Well, they're made out of aluminum, and they're similar an oval in shape for the front feet. The other, the hind feet are a little bit different shape. They're a little bit more like oblong. But you got little toe grabs that you can put on them, or you like on the turf you just use things with no toe grabs. That's the way they in most racing jurisdictions that they call them queen's plates, and that's what they run with no toe grabs. But on the dirt surfaces you need a little bit of grip, so they have these small toe grabs that you're allowed to put on.
And describe to me when you get the anvil out when you're working the hammer on the horseshoe. What are you doing?
Well, I'm making it for sure the shoe is shaped to the foot and that it's level. And that's basically what you got the anvil for.
And you got your little hammer working away on it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, hopefully you don't have to beat on it a whole lot, because really you shouldn't shape the shoe too much. You know, you most likely want to go by the shape of the foot.
And also describe to me how you trim the actual hoof itself. You've got kind of that long, for lack of a better word, emery board that our wives would use.
Well, you first of all, you after you pull the shoe off, you take your knife and you pare around the sole and the frog to get the excess out of there. And then you take your nippers, like little pinchers, and you clip around the toe and get that off. And you take your file or emery board or what you want to call it, and you make sure that the foot is level.
How important is that everything's level?
Well, I mean, just due to math, if you was an athlete in any sport, you wouldn't want your foot to be on level when it hit the ground. So the same thing with a horse's foot. They hit the ground flush, and that's the best way to do it.
And the tools of your trade. I mean, you've got a toolbox just like a carpenter would have.
Yeah, similar. Yeah, similar. You wear the apron because they drag them nails through your legs and stuff like that. They act up. I mean, precautionary measures, but it's pretty much the same as a carpenter.
How big are these horses that you're wrapped around standing there, you know, with your back turned to them while you're doing this?
Well, they're between 900 and 1,200 pounds, so they're a whole lot bigger than I am. I'd have to go to Jenny Craig if I was that big, wouldn't I?
What's it like working with them, the danger factor?
It doesn't even affect me, because if I was so scared of horses, I wouldn't be working with them. Because the people that get scared is ones that get hurt, because you make all the wrong moves.
How do you approach a horse and get a feel for a horse when you come up to put shoes on that horse?
Well, I mean, you can pretty much look at him, know he's going to be a simpleton or nothing. I mean, you get some spooky horses or something, never been touched much or handled, then you get them tranquilized. If you let you want your head kicked off. So that's your choice. I mean, the safest route sometimes is the best.
What's the worst thing that you've had happen to you while you've been shoeing a horse?
Well, I've been kicked in the head, which that probably didn't hurt me because I was a simpleton anyway. But anyway, I've been drugged. I've been nails drugged through my legs. I had a piece of my calf muscle pulled up by a nail hooked in my leg. And I've had my hands fractured before. I mean, there's been a lot of things that have been busted up, but it's all about racetrack 7 days a week. There's no such thing as being hurt. As simple as that. If I'm not here, it's because I'm dead.
There's no injured reserve list
for farriers. If I don't show up, you can look in the obituary column. As simple as that. Because I ain't never missed a day.
And they'll need to find someone else to put the shoes on their horses.
Yeah, if I'm dead, I'm going to be hard to shoot in. At least I can't mess them up. That's for darn sure.
What's the most famous horse that you've ever worked with at the barns?
Well, I mean, I've trained horses for years, and I've had a couple of them that wasn't famous, but I've done a lot of horses that I've worked on that we could actually run pretty good. I mean, they even had a horse called Crossbatch. I mean, 400,000 or 500,000 with him, and I mean, it's a bunch of them I worked on. As far as famous ones like Big Brown and stuff like that, no, I've never worked on anything like that. I used to stay around here booing. He didn't get them kind of horses around here.
What's it like for a horse that comes in, let's say, for the Preakness at Pimlico? How important is it while they're here in Baltimore to have someone like you working on their shoes to make sure everything's right for the big race?
Well, they should always have a backup. Just for some reason, anything can happen in 2 weeks before the Preakness. They can kick a wall, they can grab a shoe and do anything. If you don't have somebody here to fix them, you're going to be in trouble. But most of the time, these guys that come in these kind of races, they should bring their own guy out there, spend the money, because this is a game of men, not boys. So, you know, if somebody's used to working on a horse, you're probably better off getting them.
And what will it be like for the Preakness? When will these shoes that the horses wear have been put on them?
Well, if they had shoed them before the Derby, the most likelihood than anything they'd be doing is checking them. I mean, and if you're going to shoe them, I guess you're probably better off doing it 4 or 5 days out in case you mess them up. You have time to recuperate. And that's not telling you the truth. I mean, that's the facts. But like I say, they'll all be checked before they run. I'm sure of that because, I mean, if I had a horse in a race like that, believe me, it'd be somebody on call. I wouldn't care what it cost.
And how's the track at Pimlico on the dirt? What type of shoe do they wear, and how does it respond?
Well, normally they're just wearing your regular toe grabs. You're allowed more 4 millimeter of toe grab, which is about a quarter inch long. And you got an outer rim shoe. That's a rim shoe that goes all the way around the outside of the foot. But most of them guys will probably use the 4 millimeter shoes. I mean, you got to get a little bit of grip because it's kind of sandy over there at Pimlico. And the track this year, you know, the track is safe, but it's a little bit slow this year. So these horses will have to be fit when they run. So you can't mess up training either.
And being a farrier, what is it that you look for when you see a horse around the barns, like the Stakes Barns at Pimlico? Do you go right to the shoes?
Well, no, I would most like to look at the body weight of the horse and what he looks like healthy-wise, because if they're in them kind of races, they're good horses anyway. And I make sure they walk across that the shoes ain't falling if I'm going to bet on them. I mean, really. It's mostly the appearance of the horse. You see how he's traveling in the morning. I mean, see if he's got a nice smooth stride in the bridle. A whole lot of things you've been looking for if you're on a gambling standpoint.
People like you, farriers, are young people getting into this business now to learn and find out what you do?
It is. There's numerous young people, but it's all about being whether you're lazy and have good work ethics, because you got to have that if you're going to be in this business. Because blacksmiths are, and that's not many of us, so you got to be dependable. So if you want to be a farrier, you got to come with what goes along with it, and that's dependability. And that's not a big attribute with a lot of farriers, because most of them don't show up on time. You got to be there to do the work. As simple as that. I mean, if I was a young kid and was going to get into business, this is a business I would be in, because you can make a few bucks, and you're outside all the time. I love my job. Simple as that.
What's it like for you when you're at Pimlico and you know you're at an historic track outside one of the barns, putting shoes on horses that could possibly be making horse racing history at such a place like Pimlico?
Yeah, well, I like action. Simple as that. I mean, come on. It's fun watching these big horses run. It's as simple as that. I mean, someday we wish you had one like it. You know what I mean? But they're hard to get. They go through a lot of horses to get a horse like they run in the Preakness in Belmont. Horses you never see that are bred in the pink that never make the races. So these are the ones that made it, and they put on a good show most of the time. As simple as that. I mean, it's going to be a good show on Preakness Day. I mean, that horse who won the Derby, man, I tell you what now, he's a real horse. Somebody who beats him, they better be ready for action. I mean, the only thing I can tell you, what I seen the other day.
And you know his farrier did a good job because he moved across that track.
He moved across that like a butterfly. I mean, he run by them like they was tied to an anchor. That's the basic bottom line. That's fact. You seen the race, didn't you? You know. I mean, if he gets a good trip in the Preakness, he's going to be hard to beat.